everybody, and welcome back to Awake All Hours, the podcast dedicated to all corners of electronic music and club culture. With me, your host today, Ali Chester. It gives me great pleasure to welcome you all to the show, whether you're an old timer or whether you're a new listener. Thank you for taking the time to join me today and tune in to Awake All Hours. Just a little brief overview of what Awake All Hours is, if you are unfamiliar. We are a podcast, as I said, dedicated to all corners of electronic music and club culture, a podcast that I run, manage and present alongside my dear friends and co-hosts Will Edwards and George Stamp. You can catch us talking about electronic music in a myriad of forms on wherever you get your podcast, basically, you know, album reviews, talking points, records we love, clubbing experiences, all that kind of stuff. And of course, interviews that we run alongside our sort of our regular show. You are listening to one of those interviews right now. It is an episode of Insights, as you can tell by the title of today's episode, Insights, episode 21. And that means that I am, as usual, joined by an esteemed guest of honour today. And it gives me great pleasure. I'm really happy to be joined by the ultra-talented Dutch DJ and producer Oceanic, who has taken the world of underground dance music by storm over the past decade or so with his unique brand of rich, tactile, experimental techno and ambient. With the bulk of his recent work finding a snug fit and family home on his brother Oberman's impeccable Nuclear Audio imprint, which is a podcast and people's favourite, his startling new album Choral Feeling, released in January this year, saw Oceanic create a beautiful piece of work with a refined focus on connection and the human voice, ingeniously sampling over 30 of his friends singing and weaving them into his compositions. To talk about all of that and more is, of course, Oceanic. Welcome, Job Oberman, to the show. Thank you so much for joining me. How are you today?
Welcome. Thanks, Ali. I'm really good.
Pleasure.
Yeah.
Great. Lovely to be with you, Job, and a real pleasure to be joined by you. We've been looking forward to this one, and I'm really happy, you know, to have managed to make this interview come together.
Yeah,
and thank you for your help in organizing that.
Thank you for asking me. Thank you for having me on here.
It's a pleasure.
It's nice to do this over a video call, straight from like my studio in a sea freighter container.
Yeah, it's nice. I was just admiring your. I know, dear listener, that you unfortunately can't see what I am seeing and have that view. But
yeah,
just admiring your beautiful studio, Job. Could you just tell everybody a little bit about it, please?
Well, it's a very DIY. Sort of complex of sea freighter cargo containers where the isolation between our studios is not that good. So if the dub reggae plant plays next door, I can't do anything. But it's the charm of this place. And I share this with my good friend Tammo Hesselink. We split our time here. But it's a nice place to come here. It's just like a short bike ride from my home in Amsterdam.
Fantastic. Yeah, it looks really nice. That must be quite nice to be surrounded by, as you say, sometimes maybe mildly inconvenient when you've got that bleed of sound, but in many ways really nice to have that kind of bleed of
influences. Music around is just it's very different. It's sometimes just piano, sometimes it's just someone at violin, someone is making really hard hip-hop. It's everything.
Amazing. Yeah, it must be really inspiring. Lovely. So, as I say, welcome to the show, Job. We're going to get stuck in and, you know, I'm really excited to talk about all things Choral Feeling in a moment, your fantastic album that came out just a few months ago. But before we do, I'm just going to start where we always like to start with our guests and just ask you a little bit about your early years, if I may, where you grew up and how you started getting into music, you know, any formative experiences that you may have had when you were younger, you know, getting into club music or otherwise.
I grew up in a small town called Goes, which is in the southwestern part, rural part of the Netherlands, like an hour or so below Rotterdam, where in Zeeland, so that's like the province Zeeland, where it's like close to the sea, close to the ocean, close to the water. And there's just not that much to do, especially like music-wise, there's not much going on. The town was just a town of 30,000 people with some small villages surrounding it. But I got into music quite early. I guess influenced by my brothers and influenced by the internet. I got into like the really, the really British indie, electronic indie. Nice. There was the wave of Klaxons, Falls, Late of the Pier. That was the bands when I was like 13, 14, I was really into.
Nice.
And I started also a band in that same kind of sphere, same kind of little corner of indie electronic music. Yeah.
Amazing.
That's where it basically started for me. Then I started to play
Incredible.
Drums. I remember in high school, it was just with two friends. We started a band and we couldn't even play instruments, but we just decided who would play what instrument before we could play anything. I just played drums.
Incredible. Yeah. Those bands, particularly Falls, were really pivotal and instrumental, I think. You know, again, over here and likewise, you know, within sort of our circles and, you know, and very formative for getting into sort of a wider range of music.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting. I'm not sure quite what it was about someone like Falls or those bands. I guess, do you think it was that kind of, you know, combination of sort of indie and electronica and production sort of kind of beginning to bleed in together? Or what was it for you, do you think?
I'm not sure. I wasn't that into electronic music. I think from that, I was really into, my brother listened to like more screamo punk music, came from that, and I loved like a bit more softer, and I came onto the UK indie side of things, like electronics. I think came later when I was like 15, 16, when like this French electro wave came of Ed Banger, of Justice and Sebastian and all those kind of French block house and French electro came. I think that was a big part of me getting into electronic music.
Yeah.
And then via bands like LCD Sound System was huge for me. And then somehow it came, dived into electronic music when I was like 17 or 18. And I had the chance to move out of this small town in Goes and move out to Amsterdam to study there.
Amazing. So that leads me perfectly on to my next question, which was going to be, so after that sort of, you know, sort of 15, 16, that kind of like French sort of blog house sort of wave that you mentioned there, and then moving to Amsterdam to study, as you just highlighted, like what was it like for you to kind of, you know, be in Amsterdam and to absorb all that kind of, you know, fresh electronic music? What sort of sounds were you kind of getting into at that time?
I guess like a lot of the more German house kind of thing. I like in the first year I moved to Amsterdam. A few months later I went to Trouw for the first time, that club in Amsterdam. And I started going to all these festivals in Germany like Melt and Nachtigital. And then this German kind of minimal sound was really like minimal German deep house sound was quite of a big influence on everything. I think also this is also probably influenced by my brother Stuart, who does the News Clara label. He was DJing already back then, more like also this German like minimal sound, and that influenced me a lot. Yeah.
What sort of year was this? What sort of kind of time was this that you were at uni?
Dude, this started in 2009,
right?
2010, yeah,
right,
yeah. And that's when I also like the band, indie band that I was in, started to like fall apart, and I started to make music on my own. And if you make music on your own, you just fall on electronic music.
Exactly. Then, it's quite natural, isn't it?
Yeah. And then you start DJing, and then you start DJing house parties, and it naturally grows from there. Basically.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
No, that's really interesting. The reason that I ask about that sort of the time that was, I'm very interested in that sort of sound. And I think that I came to electronic music a little bit later than that, maybe sort of like mid 2010s.
Yeah.
Around that sort of time was when I think the interest really got peaked. And there was this sound, I remember the sound you say about that German minimal deep house sound.
Yeah.
For me, it was anything coming out on Oskutton.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Berghain's in-house label was really inspiring and infatuating to me. And it was a very different sound then than it was now, you know, the kind of the early Detman and Clock records and things like that, which were very much that sort of cold, yeah, reduced Berlin minimal sound is how I would also kind of coin it. It's interesting to me to hear that it's
but for
a
me
similar
it was the sound that came was like more of like the warmer minimal deep house sound that came from like labels like Dial or Smallville, right, a little bit, or also they came from like the minimal like Villa-Lobos, but especially this they came from this label White, and of course why can't I come on Kun Records from Leipzig. There was this, like these few labels that DJs like Lawrence and Eftemin before he played these more like techno sound, and those that kind of sound really captured me somehow, and it was also very different from all the hard electro or indie or punk that I used to listen to. It was just so minimal and soft and very stretched out, but very warm.
That's really interesting. I the kind of what you're highlighting there, the sort of the warmer sound to the more icier sound that maybe is, you know, that I was referring to. And what was I going to say? Sorry, I've lost my train of thought slightly.
Those are also go ahead.
Sorry to cut you off. No, you feel free to carry on. I'll come in again in a moment.
Oh yeah, I mean those were also the early days of the Inner Visions people, of Dixon and Ame and
Of course. And I think, like you were saying, that was a really interesting thought there that you said, you know, it's kind of unlike anything that you've heard up until that point. It's sort of the complete ante of what you know, isn't it? Yeah. Like it's not structured in the sense that it's not verse, chorus, bridge. No. You know, it's long form, extremely stripped back.
Yeah, it's not
very warm.
It's not like trying to get out the maximum energy within these 2 hours that you have. It's just, it's quite relaxed, but it can still be intense, but in a very different way.
Yeah. Yes, and I feel that you can go two ways with that, can't you? You can either be really turned off by that repetitive nature of it, or you know, kind of, you know, that sort of new form, or be very, very infatuated with it and intrigued. And I think that similarly, that was something I felt for sure.
Yeah, but you need the clubbing experience or festival experience to to experience this what that music means.
Yes.
Yeah. You can't listen to only to the records and then explain to someone what it feels like. You need to hear it sometimes in a club or in a setting where it makes sense. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, that's really interesting. And I think that I'd like to talk a little bit about, of course, the Dutch scene and Nuclear, you know, the label that you have released many a time on, and of course, released Choral Feeling on, your brother's label that, you know, you mentioned there. And the Dutch scene, so, you know, it's a scene that, as an observer in the UK, has really become a force of nature in the European and worldwide electronic music sort of you know, story and patchwork, you know, and labels, you know, Nuclear as well is one of our favorite label. My co-host George adores Nuclear. You know, he follows the label really closely, as we all do. But you know, it's a real point on the map now amongst labels like Deckmantel and Nekkelhuis as well, you know, those sort of big, sort of high profile Dutch labels. I wanted to go the sort of long way around to Nuclear. Firstly, the Dutch scene, like what's your experience been having lived there and sort of watched the scene develop? How has it sort of changed and evolved since you first started getting into electronic music?
That's a really good question. I never really thought of it in like a progress kind of way. I never thought about the difference of like 10 years that I've been in Amsterdam and also lived for a big part in Rotterdam.
Yeah.
Which is also different cities and different worlds and different scenes. But still, like from the start, at least in Amsterdam, the city is just quite small, where it's just 900,000 people.
Right.
The nightlife scene isn't that big, especially if you're interested into one specific kind of electronic music. That there's only a small number of clubs that people go to. Mm. So if you go, if you go every week, if you go regularly, and you talk to people, at some point you just know everyone. You just know of everyone.
Yeah.
How I feel now about the scene is that it's very collaborative. I feel like not that many people collaborate on music, but I feel that it's very supportive. That people know that each have their own little corner within the city, and each support that specific sound. If you take like other artists that are like Upsemi or like an Interstellar Funk, or like they all live here in the city, but they all have our own specific sound, and no one has the feeling that we need to elbow one out of the way to get what we want to do.
Yes.
And I also feel the city is quite supportive of new upcoming DJs. So it's quite a small but very supportive scene, and I think that shows to the outside world, to outside of the country.
Yes, absolutely.
And I think when I hear stories from maybe before I started making music, before I started like getting into the scene in Amsterdam, I feel that is a big difference than before. That is much more supportive of each other, and not as maybe you don't have to fight to secure your spot.
Yes.
And I feel that there's a difference than it maybe used to be 10 years ago.
Right.
So in that sense, it's much better.
Yeah. That's really interesting. You know, again, the artists you mentioned there, Upsemi among them, you know, and Interstellar Funk, and, you know, all these really, you know, these
big... I'm just naming like two artists, but there's just...
Yes, but they...
I could name anyone else, actually, in Amsterdam, but they're like...
Yeah.
Yeah. You can feel that everybody has their own little patch of where their music belongs, and everybody's happy with it, and everybody supports in that little field.
Yeah, it feels like that. That's really interesting to hear. It feels like that from the outside, you know, and everyone's allowed to sort of just carve their own lane and flourish, you know, in that sort of supportive community, creative community. It has sort of echoes, sort of nodding along of the scene here in Bristol. You know, we were talking to, I know your friend, Larry, Bruce, and a couple of episodes ago. And he was saying how Bristol feels like a big village. You know, again, it's a smaller population to Amsterdam, you know, probably about half the size, but it's still, you know, those relatively small cities producing a real crop of, you know, of support and a network for those artists, allowing everybody to flourish is an interesting parallel.
I think it's the same feeling as Bristol.
Mm.
I had the luck to visit Bristol now a few times, and I've had like, I know a few people there, and... Shout out to everybody in Bristol, but you feel this in Bristol.
Yeah. You, by the time you've gone to a few gigs, you start to recognize everyone, you know, it's that sort of feeling, you know, you go, there's Bruce, there's Batu, you know, it sounds like a similar sort of thing, you know, oh, there's Upsemi, oh, there's, you know, it's Cellar Funk. That's really nice. That's a really nice feeling.
Yeah, if you just go to Garage Nord every week, you just see everyone.
Exactly.
Or if you go to the school, if you go to Radio, or you go to a few of these places, there's only like a handful of places, and that's where everybody's at.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And you know, it's a scene that I think again in the as a UK observer, it's obvious I'm going to be. UK sort of centric in my viewpoint.
Give me the outside perspective.
Yeah, the outside perspective is exactly that, I think. You know, I mean, us Brits, you know, flock to Deckmantle Festival every year. It's full of us, you know, for better or for worse, maybe sometimes, depending on your perspective. But, you know, I go there, you know, I go there almost every year now. I make it, you know, it's become part of my, you know, festival calendar. And I know it's the same for so many people. And, you know, that is just a sort of a sort of flagship for the Dutch scene, perhaps I'm using as an example. And of course, you know, institutions and places like Garage Noord, you know, the club scene and the school, which you were a resident at, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Nuclear, you know, sort of one thing that I really wanted to talk about, which was, you know, obviously your brother's label, which is fantastic and, you know, so well curated and become a home for you and so many incredible artists. You know, I was going through the roster, you know, again today, Kunduku, Oceanic yourself, of course, Up Sammy, Mary Lake, you know, Lawrence Ledoux, all these artists that we love, Martinu and people like that, you know, and that we really admire. How, if you could just tell me a little bit about the sort of origins of that label and how, you know, it sort of began to grow and from it, from your point of view, the role it sort of played in the fabric of the Dutch scene.
Yeah, for me, it's very interesting always because it's just, it's very close to me because it's my brother doing it. And I always, maybe not underestimate, but I feel like when you talk about it, it's like, oh yeah, it's such a big thing, but for, cause it's now 10 years, this year it's 10 years Nuclear.
Wow. I didn't realize that 10 years is incredible. Congratulations, Nuclear.
And it just started 10 years ago or 12 years ago with him and Matthijs, who did the first record and the two like albums and who made so much crazy good music. With him making a record that he didn't know where to release and just asking, and then Sjoerd said, then I will release it. And that was like the start of Nuclear.
Amazing.
And since then, it's just been very organically friends and people surrounding Sjoerd, my brother, and his taste in music.
Yeah.
And it's always been the same recipe, I think. Like, people that are either friends with him, or there's only like a handful of people that have sent in demos and became later friends. But I think all of the artists that are on the label are somehow are personally connected to my brother or to...
Yeah.
And it feels like a group, big group of friends. Yeah, that is connecting all these people. So it's a very simple but effective but magical recipe, I guess.
Yeah. Amazing.
It's just my taste of the taste of my brother, and then it's like sometimes like creative genius of putting certain songs together, and he has a really good outlook on how things should look, on the design of it, on the general aesthetics, and it's just been steadily growing as like a, but it also, it feels like you say, like it's very ingrained in the Dutch scene, but it also feels like a separate institution somehow. It's like a thing that's in Rotterdam, that's my brother doing in Rotterdam, and now it's connected all of these artists in the Netherlands and outside.
Yeah.
But for many of them, yeah, it was like a first starting point, like Up Sammy or Kunduku was like the first, me was the first records re-released.
Yeah.
So it's a, it's very special that my brother has all these trust in these, in me, in all the other artists to release their first records, and then builds upon that. On, I think that's also what it's about, to like build a relationship through the music with each other. Sounds very corny as I say it now.
No. No, it sounds.
Like we build a relationship, but it's what it is.
Yeah, and again, you know, that's how some of the best things originate, isn't it? You know, those collectives and tight-knit groups of artists who kind of get to work together and form something new and beautiful and exciting, and then watch it grow, you know, like Nuclear has over the past decade. I sort of hadn't clocked it being a decade. That is really cool. That's a great milestone.
Yeah, it's a decade, yeah.
And
yeah, the first record was in 2013, the Isms of Matthijs, which is still a sick record.
Yeah, like you say, sort of still timeless. And again, you know, that warmth that you mentioned in that early electronic music that you were getting into seems to be present in Nuclear, that minimal warmth. I feel that in sort of throughout most of the releases that I listen to on that label, which is really cool to sort of trace that a little through line there.
Yeah, there's this warmth of melodies, of some trance, but more trance in a sense that you just get lost in these melodies or rhythms or... it's minimal without being minimal.
Yeah.
without stripping it down to techie minimal.
Yes.
But it's quite special.
Absolutely. Yeah, very special. Yeah. And, you know, I think that
I wouldn't have guessed it would have gone 10 years if you asked me 10 years ago.
But right.
Now that 10 years has passed, it's like, wow, this is really such an amazing achievement, such an amazing run of music.
Yeah, it really is. And the catalogue speaks for itself, and, you know, it's just fantastic. So, you know, and of course, amongst that catalogue, a real sort of crown jewel around the decade point is your album Choral Feeling, which is a really nice segue onto the main sort of topic that I wanted to talk about today. And, you know, firstly, say congratulations on the album. You're fantastic record.
Thanks.
We love it on the show. So many people love it as well. It's one of those albums that, you know, you all the right noises from all the right places within electronic music, I think, from, you know, whether it's press or, you know, or heads within the scene and, you know, and DJs and artists have really responded well to it. And I know that a lot of people have really resonated with that album. You know, it's been really well received. Firstly, I guess, you know, we're recording this on the 11th of April, if I've not got my dates wrong, Tuesday the 11th of April.
It is.
So we're sort of, you know, nearly 3 months, I suppose, from release. How have you found the response and the kind of the 3 months after the album? How have they been for you?
Yeah, I never expected this kind of response. I never really thought it would. I was like, hope it would resonate with people. And the only thing that I really wanted it was that it would resonate with my friends, that they would somehow connect to it, that they would somehow have some feeling when listening to it, that it would just connect to them. And that already happened before the release, because a lot of my friends already obviously heard the music, and then it felt this connection through the music with them. And that was the most important part for me. But then it somehow expanded to people outside connecting to it, also connecting to this idea, connecting to this this feeling or this idea behind it. And yeah, that felt quite special. I guess I made the music, I made it quite some time ago already. I think I started like 2 years ago, 1.5 years ago. And so this moment of release was just like a small point at the end of a long process.
Yeah.
And now 3 months later, it like the moment of release doesn't, for me, it didn't feel like this big moment anymore. So I was like, oh, now it's out there. That's fine. It's just, I didn't expect it to people that it would resonate that much with people.
Right. It sounds like a really common story, that of this long-term project, right? Two years, 3 years, maybe more. And then just it sort of finishing and then kind of being out there in the world. And it must be strange to let go of a project like that. And also, like you say, have that response where people really, really, you know, pick up on it and grab onto it, you know, in a big way as well. Mm-hmm. I understand. Yeah.
Yeah. And also from after that release, I could somehow listen it to with other ears. Mm. So you have this feeling that you can listen to the music through other people's ears.
Yeah.
I always do that when you have a music piece when it's not really finished, or like a track that's not completely finished, but you play it to someone who is sitting next to you, then you don't really necessarily play it for their reaction. But if you play it with that person next to you, you somehow hear it through their ears. You feel their experience.
Yeah.
And I somehow had this in a big way when it was released, and I got like these messages, and I felt like, okay, people connected the album to this kind of context, this kind of other artist, or they felt this when they listened to it. And so you suddenly have like this new set of ears that you listen to your own music to.
Right. That must be a strange sensation, but quite a good, nice, pleasant one also maybe as well.
Well, like when it resonates with people, it's a nice sensation.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. That's good. Yeah, amazing. You know, like I say, we love the album, and I've been really enjoying revisiting it, you know, in the lead up to this interview and going back to it. You know, the nature is often we review an album, so we tend to sort of, you know, really rinse and repeat it for sort of 3-4 days and then more stuff to cover. But it's so nice to go back to. I really, you know, sort of treasure these moments where you can go back and appreciate an album more and dive into it more. You know, if you could just explain, please, to perhaps our listeners who aren't so familiar with the story behind the album, what the concept of the album meant to you and your intention behind making this project.
Let's see, where do I start? the idea, well, the album is made of like around 30 friends and their voices. They're singing, or they're like talking, or there's some poetry, spoken word stuff mixed in. But basically all voices of friends that I recorded during a period, during this lockdown period. And I wanted to, because I started working with voices in the project before this with the singer Gretje Bijma. And I had so much fun working with the voice as an instrument instead of working just as the voice, as the lead as a vocal piece on top of a band, but using the voice as an instrument. And then together with that, I always had the feeling that people were too scared of singing in public, or even always if you ask someone, can you sing this? People are, the first thing they say is, no, I can't sing. But what they mean is, I'm afraid to sing, or I feel like there's some shame around singing, and some shame around using your voice, which I think is so sad. So there's so much joy in singing and also sharing voices, and also in at least Western cultures, the communal singing is, I think, it's less and less prevalent. You can also see this in protests, like protests in the 50s, civil rights protests or social movement protests. They had like songs, like the 1st of May, there's a big, I don't know what they call it in English, but the Arbeiter song, the union, workers union songs. And now protests are much more, what do you call this? Like,
chant-based
chants, or... that's the word. Yeah, it's more like chants. It's more like certain phrases chants, and more like really protest chanting. But in the 60s, it was very different. It was much more singing. And that's only one example of that. Also in like primary school, at least in the Netherlands, people sing less. So there was all these combinations of things like, okay, how can I have people sing more? How can I have close friends try to step over a barrier of this shame around singing? And also, how can I combine this into this, using this voice as an instrument? And then during this lockdown, I just started visiting friends with a small voice recorder, and we just started singing together. We like went to two friends or a friend, and then I did like some vocal exercises. We just like, we just started singing different notes. And I have all these recordings of like 15 or 20 minutes where we just sing a few notes, or somebody sings like a lyric of a song, one of their favorite pop songs. and all these like a few hours of recordings of friends just singing together. And it's very special still to listen back to those recordings, to those like the raw recordings.
Yeah.
Some of those were also made on like just you would just be at home, we'd just get drunk and then we started singing.
Yeah.
And it was just a 20-minute recording where people make jokes and people laugh and then some singing in between. And I cut up small parts of that and made this into this music. Mm. And then there were some friends that were lived a bit further away that send like voice notes of songs or poetry or whatever, or just some weird sounds.
Mm.
So I like the hours of these recordings. From that I just started building tracks, making melodies, and it somehow organically evolved into this album.
Mm.
Yeah.
Amazing.
I think that's most of the concept and intention. Yeah.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
So for me, it's still, for me, it's still that when I listen to the album or listen to the music, then I still have the feeling I'm listening to my friends. I can, most of these sounds, I can discern who it is. I can distinguish who sang that.
Yeah, that must be, it's a very beautiful sort of place for an album to come and for anything to come from. And I, you know, even just sort of thinking about how it, those original 20-minute sort of voice recordings, how they must be such a great document in themselves, you know, and such a, you know,
really
interesting thing to listen back to. You know, and yes, it seems that a word that pops up around when I read about this album and hearing you talk about it, and it's actually literally, I've just realized this, it's literally in the first song title, but joy seems to be quite a big deal for this, you know, the just pure connection with your friends and the joy of singing mm-hmm. something with someone else or alone, you know. Would you say that's fair? Is that something that was kind of, you know, an intention of yours going in?
That's, I mean, for me, that's also a big part of clubbing, is to create this sense of joy.
Yes.
It was like this exaltation, this exhilaration of joy that just starts within your body, and you can just can't feel but shake your body and feel this connection, and feel this joy is the good word. That track title came really late,
right?
But somehow that encapsulates quite a lot of it, I think.
Yeah, it's certainly a really joyful listen, you know. And you know, the way that seems a bit, I'm going to ask a question now that seems a bit silly to try and quantify it, but I was just wondering what sort of, in your head, percentage of this record is human voice, if you would sort of kind of put
I guess like 90%, like 95%.
It really is that much.
It's just the kicks, and there's like a few percussion things. But all of like synth sounds are just transformed voices, and all of the hi-hats and like high percussion sounds are also voices, because you hear already in my voice, if you cut off like the T's of words, you just have a hi-hat.
Yeah. That's really
incredible. You don't recognize it as a voice anymore, but there was a lot of like higher percussion, and I think there's just a bunch of sounds that are not voices. Yeah,
that's
even
incredible.
Like the sub basses of some of the tracks are voices, but then like lower the octaves, put on like an octaver, and it just transforms into really sub bass. But it was quite hard to work with that, because sub bass has to be quite pure. Of course, it has to be like this pure sine wave to work in a club. But the voice is never as pure. Yeah. It always fluctuates. It's never a pure tone, especially if it's friends of ours who are not, they're not professional singers, so they can't hold like a constant. They can sing beautifully, but they can never, it's hard to hold like a constant tone or constant note.
Yeah.
So if you transpose that to lower to a lower octave, you can feel this fluctuation of, and in this song Sunshine, there you have this low bass where you just, if you notice it like, if you notice it slowly evolving around the tone. Yeah. So sometimes it was hard to find a good spot for some of those voices, but I think it was worthwhile to stick to the concept to the most extreme form.
I think that's really cool.
Just club kicks were too difficult to make effective. Yeah. I tried it a few times, but it was just, okay, this doesn't make sense anymore. Then no one can play it.
I love that though. I like the idea that, you know, if it were possible that this album would be 100%
voice. It doesn't make sense anymore. It was just so much effort to make like a good sounding kick, and it's just like, okay, I'm just gonna use a sample or a synth for this because it doesn't make sense anymore.
I think you're allowed to do that. I think when you've made 90% of the album out of human voice,
if you still wanted to be some kind, a little bit of club music in there, then it needs to, like, you need normal kicks.
Yeah, that sounds like a really interesting, not problem, but challenge, I suppose, or new territory to negotiate, where you are, as you say, the one you're saying about the sort of the sub basses and that lower register, that resonant vocal that comes through in a more kind of, like you say, what you would think of as the kind of the sub bass, the club bass of the song, which is in KXT, which is a personal standout. Absolutely love that track.
Yeah.
Really mesmeric, aquatic sounding deep techno. And I think the aquatic part of that comes from almost the whale song of the way that the vocal is is processed, but how, like you say, some of those frequencies must be so low in the sub bass and so unusually sort of shaped, I suppose. Like, was that a bit of a challenge for you to negotiate? I mean, you've highlighted it there a little bit, negotiating how you actually handle human voice in a club track, if that makes sense.
What do you mean, like specifically in KXT or
just more generally, really? But maybe KXT as an example of that being used, that sort of technique of taking the human voice and making sort of a bass tone or a, you know, something that would be more synthetic typically.
Yeah, I guess so, because there's the bass tones in the lower KXT is like tum, 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 and the kick is actually a kick drum, but those bass tone is actually your voice, but you probably don't discern that. Well, I can hear it. I can't even hear it that well anymore. But then all the top layers of like, those are just like stuttered voices. Yeah. Most of that is actually my voice. That's the only track with my own voice.
Oh, really? That's cool.
Those are like stuttered voices. But I guess KXT was quite easy, or like easy is not maybe a good word, was manageable because it's just an empty track. With not that many like harmonic or melodic elements. Right. Sunshine was the one where it was the hardest because there's all these long synth chords and all of them are voices, but I didn't want it to sound like a choir. I still wanted it to sound like big synths.
Yeah.
And you've there in the bass in that one, just you can, it was really hard to find someone's voice that was like steady enough to make this long tone that it could transpose it to different notes and it would still sound well. And it turns out it was now it's my voice of my dad, actually.
That's nice. That's really nice.
My dad and my mom and some other people, yeah. So they're also on there.
That's really cool.
But it was what track else is there with like deep bass where it was difficult to, I guess it was this first one, the Rens Joy, which is the continuous it's like screaming voice. It is one friend of mine screaming, but then the distorted scream becoming louder and louder on a sub of someone else. And it just, but it needs to have like this. There was also difficult to find like a good bass sound that would sound good in a club.
Yeah, because that one, I love Rens Joy also. The way it sort of groans, that track, and hisses and sort of, you know, like I suppose only sort of a human could really do, you know, the kind of almost like creaking and groaning of a human, yeah. You know, and the human voice really kind of comes through in a big way on that track. And like you say, those super long synths, it's really, really interesting to have that confirmed that those are vocals sampled and taken.
But those are all
amazing. And do you, on a kind of production tip, do you have a, were there some go-to methods or even go-to sort of tools within the box in your DAW or synthesizer samplers that you kind of relied on as a sort of backbone for this project, would you say, or not so much?
No, because I also wanted to try quite different methods for each track or different project. But let's see what I have to also dig in my head. Because like I said, like most of it was made like 1.5 years ago.
Yeah.
I guess I make everything in Logic.
Right.
And there was like the, because then was this new Logic with like this basic sampler that Ableton had for years that finally Logic can do, like where it's just a basic ass.
Yeah.
Sampler. And I used that one a lot, and then I did a lot of the stuff with of transposing singing and transposing notes in Melodyne, especially that more like choir piece, the Even If I Lose Everything. That was all made in transposing notes and doubling notes within Melodyne to make like this big choir that felt like, and there it is also 20 friends singing, but each of them also, when they sang like one note, when they also only sang like I would just copy it to different notes via Melodyne. It would just create right. this big choir.
Yeah, it's so effective. I love that track. The last two, that Even If I Lose Everything and Who Comes Next, are a real, really lovely way to sort of close and see out the project, I think.
Yeah, it was a nice feeling to also close on like getting back to somewhere like where it's just compact but still emotional but still just very relaxed.
yeah really relaxed, like I say, just very quite choral and subdued and very exactly. very magical. Do you have, I know this is a really horrible question to get you to pick favorites from your work, but do you have a track that you particularly hold particularly dear on this project, or is it just too hard to choose?
It's hard to choose, but I guess I would have to choose somewhere in between Sing It to Happen, Sunshine, and this Sea Lowly track.
That's interesting. To my ears, those are three of the more where you are hybridizing. Is that a word? Making a hybrid.
I'm not sure what you mean with hybridizing.
Neither am I. I mean, what I should have said is, what would have been a better way of putting it is, when you are making these hybrids between the kind of synthetic illusion, but what is actually organic voice, you know, and really leaning heavily on the samples and, you know, the, like you say, maybe working in Melodyne and things like that. Is that, I suppose, what is it about that style of track and that style of production that was particularly sort of enticing for you to pursue?
Well, I guess I think also when I now think about it, these are also the only tracks that have like lyrics, or in the sense that they have like discernible words and they have like a text to them. Sunshine, then, of course, very simple, but like Sing It to Happen has like cut up words, and Sea Lowly has cut up words. Those are in French. So I guess that also brings some energy to it, to cut up words that were sung in a completely different way and cut them up in a new rhythmical way that somehow makes sense. It doesn't make sense anymore to the words, but it makes sense in this new musical, melodic way. Mm. But I guess that these songs are also just very close to me because of the people that sing them.
Right. Yeah. That's understandable.
And not only because of the music, but also the voices that it's made up of.
Mm.
And that's a weird feeling, because that's only for me.
But of course. Yeah. But that's lovely. That must be really special.
So it's both of those things. I think also did this like cut up words that I really like, where it's very repetitive and very trancy, just cut up words. And that's especially in Sing It to Happen and See Lowly. But this repetitive minimal kind of like minimal music as the classical minimal music, just repetition of words. That always works for me.
Yeah, nice. That's a great answer. Yeah, lovely. You know, my sort of, as we draw this section to a close, my final sort of questions were going to be about
I could talk for hours about this album still,
I'm happy to talk as long as you would like to. So if at any point you want to weigh in with anything else, then please do. My question was going to be, you know, looking forward with this project and looking forward with this sort of, with these methods and this sort of, you know, intention behind the project, you know, the human voice connection. I was going to ask, where do you see that project sort of going and leading to? And I suppose one stop that is really interesting for me personally, and I think generally, is your debut live audiovisual set at Deckmantle Festival this year.
Mm-hmm.
I would love to hear a little bit more about that and your hopes for that performance, but also just generally, do you have any other hopes for taking this album into the live setting or perhaps channeling the ideas into another recorded project?
The first thing is I've been thinking about a lot how to take this concept further, but I feel like it's a very closed off thing now that this was this one thing. Not for me working with the voices per se, but I don't think this is like a project that can be repeated or done again with like or with different people, or it wouldn't make sense that way. But as me working with like voices, I will continue to do that a lot. I did this one record with Gretje Bijma, with this free jazz singer, and we just recorded a new album, which will actually be out soon.
Amazing.
And that's also just made up, most of the parts are made up of her voice. So I'd love to just continue working with voices and seeing, like, taking that to other parts. And I have quite a lot of ideas about that, but they're still so fragmented and still, like, dispersed in my head. But then taking this album further into like live settings. So I did the first actually at Draaimolen Festival last year. Then I performed this album for the first time, like a few months before the album came out. And then we had this special project where a part of the friends that sang on the album, we formed like a small choir with 12 of the friends. And the first 10 minutes of that performance was just a pure choir with them.
Oh, amazing.
And I heard like a choir leader, and we did all these repetitions with these 12 friends and rehearsals. I mean, and we just had the first 10 minutes, we sang parts of songs, and he rewrote just two of those songs, two of the last songs, actually, the Even If I Lose Everything and Who Comes Next. He rewrote it into like an a cappella choir piece again.
Wow.
And for the first 10 minutes of that performance, we just did it with that choir. And then I transitioned into the live set around the album. So that was very special. And I love to do that again if I somewhere have the possibility to do that. Because that was a big part of people not only singing in front of a small recorder, in like a close friends, but doing it actually on stage. And I'm really proud of all those people who wanted to do this and who did it really well. And that was very very cute and very special. So I might do that again somewhere in the future, and I could do that also with people who didn't sing on the album but who form like a big amateur choir. I would love to do that. But I also want to take this live set to other places. And then Deckmantle asked me if I wanted to make an AV audiovisual set around the album for their festival. And I thought that was a great idea. And I've been thinking that was, so I created a new kind of idea concept around the album, which I think I would fit the idea, but it's not necessarily with live voices. So now I don't think I can say much about it, but there's going to be a dance choreography piece that I'm going to film and then use as visuals. And it's also about this choral feeling, this collective feeling. And it's also like a choreographical visualization of the artwork. The artwork feels like made by Bob Verhoeven, my good friend, who makes just these art. He makes these artworks just for fun. He doesn't make it for any. He just does it for his own like hobby for fun. Where he just cuts up these like human shaped figures, and when on the artwork it's within these like vortex of people. And this idea will be translated to the AV set.
Sounds
but yeah, that's going to be
can't wait.
Exciting and still a lot of work to do before Deckmantel.
Yeah, absolutely can't wait to see that, and I'm certain it will be a highlight of the festival this year among so many highlights as Deckmantel tends to offer.
And you'll be there.
I will be there. Yeah. We will all three of us who run Away Cool Hours will be there in one form or another. And perfect. So we'll be reporting on the festival and things like that. So yeah, we'll look forward to hopefully catching up or out there as well. Cool. That'll be nice.
Definitely.
yeah. Well, best of luck with the preparations. And again, yeah, congratulations on an incredible record. And as we move into the sort of latter stages of the interview, I suppose I just wanted to talk about some more general topics, and something that I wanted to start doing a little bit more with our guests is talk about like some selections of yours and theirs. So basically albums that mean something in a certain context to our guests. And I kind of have this idea, and I wanted to ask you maybe about sort of picking three records, not strictly, but three sort of points, and one being a sort of gateway or formative record for you that sticks in your mind, one record that has inspired your work today, and one more recent record for the club that never leaves your bag or sort of never leaves your USB.
Sure.
Do you have any in mind or any that you'd just like to shout out for our listeners?
Well, let's, to what period do you want the formative years to be? We've talked about the early years, the formative years, so we could go to a record of Later the Pier or something like that, or Block Party, but I think, or like a record that came later in electronic music. I think one record that jumps to mind is when I really got into this more German deep house sound, not the US deep house sound, which I loved as well, but the when I got into Dial, there was one album of John Roberts.
Cool.
Called, nice. I think, Glass 8, if I have correct. I'm going to look it up while I talk.
Yeah.
And there was this song called, or track called, the track is called Ever or Not. And cool. It's this incredible piano loop. And it just starts, the first minute, it's just this really basic piano loop, but it was one of the even within this genre of music, if you can talk about a drop, it's this the biggest drop you can have within deep house.
It's amazing.
Minimal, and yeah, it's really incredible.
That sounds great.
That was one of music where it was like different music than I knew before, very just warm and small, but still so. Still so intense.
Yeah, that intensity. Yeah, that's a really
big
good word
for me. The John Roberts Glass 8s.
Amazing. And how about one record that maybe influenced your work on choral feeling in some way, or that you were maybe listening to around the time?
Yeah, let me look this up.
Yeah, please do. No rush.
Because I just made a mix that came online a few weeks ago. What was like. Big, it's mostly constructed out of music that influenced the album.
Oh, amazing. Where can we find that? Yep.
On Apple Music. On the,
cool.
There's like
we'll
a
link it
choral feeling the mix.
Amazing.
And maybe I can see, there's actually music that influenced me, influenced this record, but it's not in this mix. It's a track by Fever Ray.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
So Fever Ray Plunge.
Nice.
Funnily, this is one of the only, this is the track on the album that doesn't have any vocals. But I still remember listening to the song. It's like, oh, this is what I want.
Yeah, that's really cool though. That's
but
really
it's like, name dozens of like more vocal pieces and vocal tracks that influenced the album. But this is actually a track that it doesn't have any vocals, only synths from Fever Ray, who always sings, of course, on her songs. Yeah.
I like that. I think that's really
but
nice.
It doesn't have any. But maybe there's another. Now I can get to the mix. I guess something that I always have to name is all the music by Caroline Shaw, who's like cool. This modern music, modern classical music composers. And she has a piece called Partita for Eight Singers. Mm-hmm. And that's incredible. That's just eight singers, and it's just all these different vocal techniques mixed with it, and that's incredible to listen to.
Amazing.
Yeah, Caroline Shaw.
Incredible. Check those out as well, for sure. And finally, one sort of record for the club that you've been playing a lot lately, or that kind of never leaves your bag.
Okay, there's this track by Relaxer that that Larry, that Bruce did a remix of.
Nice.
But then I am now looking for the original. It's more that I played this track a few weeks ago, or was it a few, like 2 months ago? And I didn't fully listen to the track at home, but I really loved the groove of it. I like really loved the track, and I knew that anything Relaxer make is sick. But then there's this really loud synth that comes in after 1 minute. I was completely like just shocked by it.
Yeah.
And more people were like in the club with a garage noise. It was like shocked by how loud this synth was.
Is it Candy the track? It's, you're referring
yeah,
to
that one, Candy. Where it's just
nice.
Yeah, that one's crazy.
Yeah,
that one's amazing. Sick.
Amazing.
That's it, I guess.
Perfect. Yeah. That's great. Thank you. We'll put, it's always so cool to hear, and we'll put that in the episode listeners, so in the description somewhere, so you can find those pics and whatnot. Yeah. And check out those artists. And yeah, and just to kind of finalize, you know, just want to talk about your sort of future projects and gigs. You seem like you've got, a busy sort of, you know, spring and summer job. You're in Taipei, if I'm not mistaken, for Organic Festival. Is that next weekend after next?
Yeah, I'm leaving on Monday and then staying a month in Asia.
Incredible.
So I'm staying in Taipei at Organic, doing the live set in the Coral Feeling live set in Organic, which is going to be very special because they really asked me to do the first set of the festival, and everybody is going to be there. So it's going to be on a Friday. They open at Friday at 5 in the afternoon. And then it's the only thing going to be open. It's just my live set as an opening kind of for the festival.
Wow. That'll be really special.
And then at 6, the two stages start, to like the music starts. So that's going to be a very special thing. And then we'll stay there in Taipei for a week and play at Pawn Shop, the club that's also run by the people behind Organic. And then going to China and Tokyo. Yeah, it's incredible.
Sounds amazing. That sounds incredible. And then as well, something that we, again, on the show are really excited for, and hopefully I think will come to, is the Cabin Fever and Nuclear party at Corsica Studios in May. That looks incredible, with Object,
that's gonna be
Up
really,
Sammy, Oceanic, Mary Lake, Oberman. Wow. Yeah,
that's going to be really nice. That's going to be really fun.
That sounds amazing. Yeah, no, we will. Yeah. I know George already has a ticket. I'm going to buy mine probably as soon as we get off air. And yeah, would encourage anybody who is in London on the 30th of May to do exactly the same. And then Deckmantle Festival. Do you have anything else sort of in between, or anything else, any other projects or gigs that you'd like to just shout out quickly before we wrap up?
Well, so I just finished this album with Gretje Bijma, with the singer. Also, last year I did a big project with a modern classical ensemble called Ensemble Klang. Mm. And I continue to work with them. I'm going to make a new composition with them. And I'm now going to make a project where we, with this ensemble, or a few members of this ensemble, are going to play more in like club environments.
Amazing.
So that's going to be special. And I'm also playing, going to be live at Drift Festival. There's a festival in the Netherlands, and they have like an opening concert with Lyra Pramuk and me.
Oh, wow. We love Lyra Pramuk as well.
Yeah.
That would be, that's a great that's double
like
bill.
They have like the night before the festival, they have like an opening concert with me and then her as the main star.
Wow. That would be very special. Would love to be there if possible, but I don't know if that would be
possible.
June 9th,
from the top of my head. I think June 9th, yeah.
Incredible. So wherever you are, wherever you're based, be it from Taipei to London to the Netherlands, you can catch Oceanic somewhere. And obviously we would encourage you very much to do that. We would also encourage you absolutely to go and buy Choral Feeling. We will be doing some sort of giveaway that we will discuss
as well.
We tend to do that traditionally, be it a giveaway with some records of yours, or perhaps some club tickets or event tickets, something like that. We will talk about that, sort that out. And listeners, keep an eye on the Awake All Hours Instagram, awake.allhours, if I'm not mistaken. You can find us on Instagram, and that's where we'll talk about that and put everything, and you can find all our updates. Stay tuned for that. But it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk all things Choral Feeling and otherwise with me. It's been great. You've been a great guest. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you, Ugly. I could have... thank you so much for having me and talking to me an hour, and like letting me air out all my my thoughts for an hour.
Yeah, pleasure.
No, I can't thank you enough.
Oh, no, absolute honor and a pleasure. So thank you. And it's been great. So thank you, everybody listening. Massively appreciate you tuning in. Hope you've enjoyed this episode of Insights with the Incredible Oceanic. And stay tuned to Awake All Hours, wherever you get your podcasts, for many more chats about electronic music in the future. We will bid you all farewell for now. Take care, everybody. Look after yourselves, and we'll see you in the next one. Thanks again, Job. Take care. Have a great spring and summer.
Yeah, thank you. You too, and see you soon.
See you soon. Yeah, see you in Deckmantle for sure. I can't wait.
No, see you in London.
See you in London, of course. What we're talking about. Yeah. See you in May, definitely.
See you in a month.
We'll book that in. Take care, everybody. Bye for now.